Lowe's knows you don't want to sacrifice reliability for savings. This July 4th, get up to 40% off select LG appliances and purchase two or three select major appliances to get an additional 10% off. Save big on LG, America's most reliable line of home appliances at Lowe's. Based on independent reliability surveys 2021 to 2024 and select major appliances as compared to competing manufacturers offering full appliance lines. See associate for more details. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. Exclusions apply. Valid 6/18 through 7/9.
This is Hidden Killers Week in Review.
A look back at the most prolific stories of the week.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi.
It's one thing to lose a case at trial. It is another thing to lose it before it even starts. Because your own team fumbled the ball so hard that the referee calls the whole game off. That's more or less what happened to prosecutors in the Barry Morphew case. In April of 2022, just 9 days before jury selection, all charges against Barry were dropped. Not because he was cleared, not because someone else confessed, not because new evidence came to light, but because prosecution failed to follow the rules so badly, in fact, that a judge barred most of their key witnesses from ever setting foot in the courtroom in that supposed trial that got called off. This is a podcast where we're going to break down why that trial, why the initial one was called off. What does it say about the case? What does it say about the case going forward now that new charges have been brought against Barry Morphew? In the comments, let me know your thoughts on this case. Is this something where they got the solid evidence now and now they can take him out because they have the body? The toxicology shows that BAM chemical combination is something that only Barry had access to. And does that make him the killer? Or is this a case of someone being pushed into a corner, someone being framed so they have an answer to what happened to Suzanne Morphew? And Barry just seems to be the one that is an easy target. Tell me in the comment section what your thoughts are. His daughters stand by him, at least as of right now. They sure have been. Will they continue? Time will tell. Again, comments on YouTube. Tell me what your thoughts are. Be sure to press subscribe wherever you're downloading podcasts so you don't miss any of the cases that we cover for you right here at the Hidden Killers Podcast and True Crime Today. At the center of the implosion was something every prosecutor is supposed to treat like sacred law: discovery. That's a process where both sides exchange the evidence they plan to use at trial. The goal is fairness. No surprises. No gotcha moments. If you're charging someone with murder, the defense has a right to know what you're bringing to court. And in this case, that's exactly where things went off the rails. It started with DNA. During the early stages of the investigation into Suzanne Morphew's disappearance, forensic teams found male DNA on some of her belongings, specifically her Range Rover and her bike helmet. This is not Barry's DNA. That much was clear. What it was run through is a national CODIS database. And it matched profiles from unsolved sexual assault cases in other states. In other words, there were DNA hits that connected to known active criminal investigations. It's the kind of thing you'd think might be relevant in a murder case, especially one without a body. But here's the kicker: that information wasn't shared with Barry's defense team until many months later. It wasn't just a delay. It was a pattern. Prosecutors didn't document key meetings with forensic analysts. Investigators from the Colorado Bureau of Investigation met with the DA's team to discuss the DNA findings. And somehow no one took notes. No reports, no official summaries, just a room full of people talking about evidence that could point to someone other than the man on trial. And not a single sheet of paper to show for it. When the defense eventually learned about those meetings and asked for documentation, they were told they didn't exist. Not because it wasn't important, but because no one had written anything down. Meanwhile, court orders were being ignored. Back in 2021, a judge had directed the DA's office to preserve emails from law enforcement related to the case, not just as a courtesy. This was a direct judicial order, but emails still lost. These are the things that can completely derail a trial. Even if you have someone that looks pretty damn guilty, if you don't follow the rules over here and the process, and it looks remotely suspicious or weird or incompetent, murderers can go free. And I'm not saying he's a murderer. I don't know the answer to that question. But I'm saying it is important to follow the rules. Witnesses later admitted they didn't fully understand the order. They weren't following it consistently. Either way, potential crucial communications between investigators and prosecutors vanished. It was like evidence was falling through the cracks of a case that was already leaking from every side. Then came the expert witnesses. When the prosecution announced its intent to try Barry Morphew, they came loaded with experts, people who specialized in DNA analysis, vehicle telematics, cell phone forensics, and so on. These were the witnesses meant to tie the digital trail together, to explain the chipmunk chasing, phone pings, to walk the jury through the truck data, to build narrative around what happened the day Suzanne disappeared. But court rules require that those experts and their reports be disclosed by a firm deadline. The DA's office missed it more than once. By the time the judge reviewed the mess, he wasn't buying excuses. And a ruling handed down March of 2022, Judge Ramsey Lama barred 11 of the prosecutor's 16 expert witnesses from testifying. A few weeks later, more were excluded, either by court order or by stipulation. In total, 14 expert witnesses were taken off the board basically as a punishment. It was a massive blow. These were the people who could explain the technical evidence. Without them, the state's case wasn't just wounded, it was practically hollow. And Judge Lama didn't stop at exclusion. He made it clear exactly how serious the situation had become. In a written order, he stated that the prosecution had shown a continuing pattern of negligence, and in his words, arguably reckless disregard for the rules. What he didn't go as far as calling it was intentional misconduct. He emphasized that the repeated violations had deeply harmed the integrity of the trial process. It wasn't one error. It was a series of them. And they all added up to a case that, in the judge's view, had been hobbled by the police trying to bring it to court. So here's where we land. The prosecution had critical DNA results that they didn't share. They held meetings about that DNA without documenting anything. They lost or failed to preserve emails that were supposed to be retained. They missed expert disclosure deadlines. And after all of that, when their expert witnesses were tossed out and their case was stripped to the bone, they were left standing in the courtroom with a stack of circumstantial evidence and a trial date 9 days away. It's one thing to argue through a case in front of a jury. It's another thing to walk into a trial knowing the most important experts can't speak. Your timelines are incomplete and your opponents are going to hammer you with your own paperwork problems. At that point, you're not preparing for trial, you're preparing for disaster, which is exactly why just over a week before it all began, the district attorney's office walked into court and asked for a dismissal. They didn't say the case was wrong. They didn't say Barry Morphew was innocent. But they didn't admit that they did admit that they couldn't go forward like this. And what they did next would reshape the entire legal trajectory of the Morphew case. 9 days before Barry Morphew's trial was set to begin, the district attorney's office walked into court and hit the brakes on the biggest case that they'd ever filed. No jury had been picked. No opening statements had been made. The courtroom hadn't even set out water pitchers yet. And just like that, the prosecution pulled the plug. They filed a motion to dismiss all charges. Officially, they said they needed more time. Unofficially, everyone could see the real problem. Their case had already been hollowed out by court sanctions, evidence exclusions, and a discovery record so mangled that putting in front of a jury would have been like trying to plug a leak with tissue paper. The motion was filed on April 19th of 2022, and if you'd been following the case, it was both shocking and entirely predictable. Just weeks earlier, Judge Ramsey Lama had excluded most of the state's expert witnesses, nearly all of them, because the prosecution had failed to meet deadlines, failed to disclose their findings on time, or failed to comply with court orders that any rookie DA should have known better than to ignore. The experts weren't minor players either. They were the ones who were going to explain the truck data, the DNA, the cell phone pings, the physical evidence, and now they were legally barred from testifying. So when the DA walked in with that motion, they did what lawyers do when the ship is halfway underwater and the rescue helicopter isn't coming. They pointed to a new problem. They said they needed more time to search a mountainous area, one they now believe might contain Suzanne Morphew's body. The problem, they said, was snow, deep snow. They couldn't dig. They couldn't search. They didn't want to go to trial without being able to examine the one piece that could contain crucial physical evidence. In a vacuum, that argument might have held up. It sounded like due diligence. Wait to find the body. Don't rush through trial. But it didn't take a legal expert to see what else was going on. The state's evidence had been gutted. Their own misconduct had led to the loss of testimony. They'd built the case around, and now they were cornered. Go to trial without the experts and risk an acquittal. Or drop the case, regroup, and hope that snow eventually melted into something useful. The motion was careful in its language. The prosecutors didn't say they couldn't prove the case. They said they shouldn't proceed without the best chance to do so. They framed it as being in the interest of justice to ensure that they had the most complete picture before putting it in front of a jury. And they made one thing very clear. They wanted the charges dismissed without prejudice. That means they could come back later, refile, start over if needed. They weren't conceding defeat. They were asking for a timeout. And Judge Lama agreed. He granted the motion, not because the evidence was bad, not because Barry was innocent, but because the process had gotten so messy, so compromised, that moving forward would have turned the trial into a legal circus. He said the decision was made in the interest of justice, and he left the door wide open for the prosecution to return. No double jeopardy, no legal lockout, just a massive case shelved. For now. Barry Morphew walked out of court that day a free man. Again, no ankle monitor, no charges pending. The courtroom that had been prepped for a trial instead became the backdrop for a press conference. Barry's defense team, led by Eaton, didn't hold back. They called it what they believed it was, a total collapse. They stood by Barry's innocence, arguing that they should never have been charged, or he never should have been charged in the first place, and that the state had built a narrative, not a case. According to Eaton, the dismissal wasn't about evidence waiting to be found under 5 feet of snow. It was about a prosecution that had lost control of its own file and nearly put an innocent man on trial without the basic foundation to do so. The public reaction was divided. Some saw the move as strategic, a DA protecting her case until more could be gathered. Others saw it as a retreat disguised as restraint. Legal analysts were more blunt. Many pointed out that if the prosecution had simply followed procedure, they could have kept their experts and gone to trial as planned. The issue wasn't just the snow. The issue was that their most crucial forensic witnesses were tossed out because they hadn't played by the rules. As one former district attorney put it, you can't ask a jury to trust your theory of a crime when the judge can't even trust your paperwork. And while the court drama faded for a moment, the professional fallout was only beginning. Linda Stanley, the DA who had charged Barry Morphew, soon found herself at the center of an ethics investigation. Among the concerns, her public comments about the case, her alleged mismanagement of discovery, and her handling of expert witness disclosures. She'd appeared on true crime podcasts, gained media interviews while the case was pending, and reportedly ignored court orders that required timely disclosure of evidence. Eventually, the state's disciplinary board opened formal proceedings against her. The findings were not good. Stanley was accused of mishandling the case so egregiously that it violated professional conduct rules, and she was ultimately disbarred. Meanwhile, Barry wasn't done. In the months following the dismissal, he filed a $15 million federal lawsuit alleging civil rights violations and wrongful prosecution. The suit claimed investigators had ignored exculpatory evidence, buried DNA records didn't match Barry, and built a case on interference rather than fact. That lawsuit didn't get far. A federal judge later dismissed it, finding that despite the chaos in court, investigators still had enough probable cause to pursue charges at the time. But for Barry and his legal team, the point had been made. They weren't just trying to beat a murder charge. They were trying to hold the system accountable for what they saw as a rush to convict without the evidence to back it up. The Suzanne Morphew case was never just about what happened on a bike trail. It was also about what happened behind the scenes, in the inboxes, in the courtroom, and the decisions that steered a high-stakes trial off the rails. When the charges were dismissed in April of 22, it wasn't because the truth had been found. It was because the people tasked with uncovering it couldn't get out of their own way. And the vacuum left behind, the story of Suzanne's disappearance remained unanswered. And now, new charges have been brought against Barry Morphew. The body was found eventually in 23. And the allegations that they're bringing say that a unique combination of chemicals, one specifically called BAM, was found in the body of Suzanne Morphew. It's a very unique combination of chemicals used in darts designed to tranquilize animals. Darts that Barry Morphew used, talked about, bragged about. And it wasn't something you just go to the Cabela's or the Bass Pro to buy more of. Mm-mm. These are very controlled substances, sold only by very specific people, with receipts. And guess who the only person in the area is who had access to that chemical, that dart with BAM in it? Barry Morphew. Another piece of circumstantial evidence. That's what the state is saying they found. And now he is charged again with first-degree murder of Suzanne Morphew. Is this a case that's clear-cut enough where you can convict? Is this a case where there's a lot of evidence that points to him, but it's not beyond a reasonable doubt? Or is this a case where someone's being railroaded because need to pin it on somebody? Or do they? His daughters, the daughters of Suzanne, stand by their dad. And that says a lot. But we have seen many cases where those closest, it's too much of a bridge, too far to believe that your father, your loved one, your mother, whoever it may be, could have done something so heinous to another person that you hold so dear. But it does happen. What are your thoughts? Where does this sit with you? Tell me in the comments section on YouTube. If you're not on YouTube and you're listening to us on iHeart, on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever it may be, check out our YouTube channel as well. Just search Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. You can watch us doing the show. We have a lot of other extras on there as well. And you can comment. That's another lovely part about it. So please do let me know what your thoughts are on this case. We're going to be covering it a lot going forward, so be sure to press subscribe so you don't miss any of our coverage. My name is Tony Bruschi. Thank you for listening. Thank you for watching. We will talk again real soon.
Want true crime coverage all day, every day? Press subscribe now to the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today and get the latest cases delivered right to your feed.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.